You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
We're already friggin' here. We're already doing it. You are listening to You Know What at the You Know Where by the You Know Who's, and we are here. It's Thursday. What are you guys doing out there? I suppose I am guessing every single one of you is working for it. That's right.
Work for it, baby. Let's go.
With Dr. Brian Cohn, and we're just waiting on Ben. He should be here very shortly. I have so much to talk about. Last week, we were not able to get together because of time constraints and whatnot. However, I put out a quick 30-minute show about just one theme, and it was being grateful. And goodness, did I get a lot of messages and emails from people who that message resonated with. And I want to let all y'all know that I am super appreciative for you telling me that you really like it. In fact, I had an idea that maybe once in a while I'll just do a solo show and we'll mix it in with the weekly show. So like there'd still be the regular Thursday Work For It podcast, but like maybe I'll do like a quick 30-minute, you know, Tuesday podcast or something by myself.
Sounds good. You know,
just to fire off some ideas and, you know, just to kind of share my experience solo. But for most of you, first and foremost, Brian, how you doing?
I am doing great. It's been a really productive week. This is starting to feel like, you know, I have that hour drive in each direction. And it's starting to feel like, you know, I'm starting to get used to that drive. So it just kind of like melts away at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning when I start heading over there. But I am starting to, you know, really organize myself really well so that when I'm there, my days are completely, you know, packed full. So I'm getting very efficient in the shop. I actually have a boatload of YouTube videos that are, you know, already, most of them are ready, and a couple of them are like 90% ready, where it's just like, I'm starting to finish up this weekend on a couple of YouTube videos that are coming out in October.
Ooh, so you're working ahead. I really like that. I really like that. Ben, are you joining us today from Kazakhstan or what? Where are you? I can barely hear you. Sounds like you're on an AM radio.
Oh, hold on. Is that better? Man, my mic volume is way down.
No, it's not. It sounds, I am not kidding you, it sounds like you're about ready to play the 1930s, Dirty 30s best hits right across our AM radio coming live at 5:30 a.m. Oh, Benjamin Butler here. We're going to be, have you guys heard of this President Eisenhower? He's fantastic.
Oh shoot!
You may want to rejoin. Yeah, you may want to rejoin. Yeah, us. Yeah. Try a different microphone.
Little technical difficulties going on at the Work For It podcast, but that happens every once in a while.
No, it's all right. We love to bust Ben's chops a little bit.
Of course, we got it.
So real quick, Brian, getting back to what you were saying about going, you're driving this hour back and forth. Now, are you doing that like almost every day, or was like 3 days a week? Or
it's between 3 to 5 days. It's getting pretty regular at this point, where it seems like the weekends I go every day. Of course, I go Saturday, Sunday.
About now,
I go probably three times throughout the regular weekday. Ben, how is your audio sound?
What about now?
Hey.
Ooh, silky smooth, baby. Smooth. Like
now we're talking.
Yeah, now you're on. So we were just, Brian and I were just talking about his commute back and forth.
Yeah.
And he's saying he's doing 3 to 5 days a week, 1 hour each way. Now I'm curious, Brian, while you're in the car, are you listening to anything? Like, I know you listen to podcasts.
Podcasts, of course, man.
And is that pretty much what you are primarily listening to, or are you running out of content, like, where you need music?
I'm to the point where, you know, I'm listening to so many different podcasts that by the time I get through all of them, there's already new podcasts coming out. So
my
days are pretty full. And, you know, there's the A-tier podcasts like ours and the other Makery Networks and the Hustle and Grind podcast and a few of them that, you know, I'm already caught up with and I'm listening to every single one. And then I've got like some B, C, and D tier where it's like, you know, if I get to those, then that's fine. If I'm, you know, driving and, you know, don't necessarily need to listen to something, then those can fall to the wayside.
Gotcha. But, okay.
Mine like stack up where they're all on Thursdays or something, you know, and then I burn through that.
They all released on Thursdays?
Yeah,
and then
they all
get
come
built
out.
Up? What's the deal with that? Is Thursday like the day everybody likes to launch a podcast?
It sure seems like it because, like, Making It comes out on Thursdays. We come out on Thursdays. I can't remember.
Art of Craftsmanship.
Art of Craftsmanship. Yeah. The AOC comes out on Thursdays. There's a handful of them that come out on Thursdays. And then, you know, Thursdays becomes like a big podcast day. And then I'm like, oh, shit. I got to go to my, like you said, Brian, like your B and C grade, you know. But recently,
what's B and C? I don't. I guess maybe we shouldn't say.
I shouldn't
what's B
say
and C,
B and C. Right?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, so what are these B and C grade podcasts? And I
what are the podcasts
about
that really suck that you kind of almost don't want to listen to?
Yeah, let's not go there. How about that?
Well, I'll say this. Like, I listen to the Modern Craftsman podcast a fair bit, and I would never put that as a B or a C. They're a class act for sure. But it's not maybe my first choice because I don't know those guys very well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So stuff like that. I started listening to this podcast called Maker Skills. It's got Essential Craftsman – or not Essential Craftsman. I can't remember his name now.
The Basement
there's
Craftsman?
Three,
there's two, a couple of guys.
It might be Essential Craftsman. Yeah. I don't remember.
Nate?
It's Essential something. No, it's not him. It's another guy back east. And then there's I'll look it up while we're talking. It's called Maker Skills, and it's kind of fun. It's kind of comical. I don't think they probably have a ton of listeners just by listening to them talk. But every week they take a skill and sort of satirize it, or, you know, kind of poke fun at it a little bit, but it's like maybe 30% satirical and then 70% serious, you know. So
sure.
Two guys and a gal, and it's just kind of a quirky show. It's it's pretty fun. Tom, who is the Essential Craftsman, I think, but I gotta look him up really quick. So,
well, you
anyway.
Know, what I've been listening to a lot of backlogs of Jeff Fader doing his thing over at the Full Blast podcast. If you didn't listen to the last few, they're all really good. I mean, he's got quite a catalog. So, like, you go back and you can listen to them all. But I got, like, you know how you get sidetracked and you start listening to one and then you forget about the others and then you go back? So, like, I started backlogging Making It, you know, with Jimmy and Bob, and I just started listening to, you know, okay, I'm going to go back like a year and just listen to all this. And you almost have to, like, Making It, you almost have to listen to it in succession because they're discussing projects, right? So, and then I kind of got sidetracked not listening to Jeff for a while. And then Jeff had Fingal Ferguson on and I listened to him.
Awesome.
And then that was great.
Great show.
Great interview. Because what I think Fingal's just interesting, you know, and on top of that, he's, he's in a lot of the same spaces that I really enjoy from a hobby perspective. So like listening to him talk about like pickling foods and sausages right. and things that I really enjoy. So it's like that was interesting. And then knife making. So there's all those things. And then last week he had Steve Schwarzer on, and I had a chance to meet Steve when I was at Blade. I never actually met him before, chatted with him a few times, but just like, yeah, cool guy, lots of history, really nice, you know, just seems like a really nice dude, you know, on
just
top of that.
Just all around, yeah.
Yeah, and so I've been listening to Full Blast making it, and then I did not realize this. Somebody shared this with me, and I can't remember who it was now. On Spotify, did you know that you can do like a listening party and you can invite people to listen with you and you can send them like a link and then listen to like, say, a podcast together, you know, like,
ooh.
And not really sure what the purpose of this was, but I was intrigued. So I was like, OK, well, I'll click on the link. So I clicked the link. It was a message from somebody in my Instagram feed, and I clicked on it, and it was Toby Fire and Steel, which, if you don't know who Toby is, he's like a blacksmith. He lives, I think, in the UK, but he's Australian.
Yeah.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And then, so what I didn't realize was, is that owner Kaglar from
Yeah, he's
Dive
co-hosting.
Everything is co-hosting
it's
now.
It's awesome.
Like, permanently. Yep. And these two guys are riffing off of each other.
Oh, they're
and
fucking
it's
knuckleheads.
Really
yeah.
good. Yeah, it's really
yeah.
good, you know?
It's great.
And that's going to be a very successful show. Yeah. Not that it wasn't when Toby was doing it, but like with the addition of owner,
yeah.
It really clicked for me. So that was shared to me as like a Spotify listen party. And then I'm like, oh shit, I was packing parts yesterday. So I was like listening to that. And owner Kaglar is an interesting dude all around.
Oh, man, he's a podcast in himself.
Does not give a fuck about anything. So like, yeah. he's great. I love that. I love listening. And then, of course, Toby, who, by the way, just he's like a ball buster extraordinaire. I don't even know.
Yeah.
He has a PhD in busting chops. This guy, I mean, yep. is so fun. And it's like dry Australian humor, which
yeah,
I didn't
you don't
really
even know.
Fully knew existed.
Yeah,
and then
don't.
I'm like, wait, this is interesting. And then, you know, they're busting each other's balls. And it was really good. So go out. And I guess they're going to be changing the name of the podcast. It's a whole big thing because it's no longer Toby Fire and Steel. It doesn't make any sense. So
they've
gonna,
been trying
to change it.
Yeah, they've been trying to come up with a name on a few of the episodes that I've listened to. And it's just been kind of it's been hilarious. But, yeah,
I had an interesting name idea for their podcast. I was thinking they could call it Owner Fire and Steel.
There you go. That'd
you
be
know,
perfect.
Just change Toby to Owner, and then you're yep. done. You're Toby and Owner Fire and Steel. No, that's lame. That's stupid.
Toboner.
Toboner Fire and Steel. Yeah. So I've been listening to that. But anyway, okay. All right. Real quick, I got so many messages about people support, you know, telling me like, hey man, congratulations on the new building, and I appreciate mm-hmm. it. I have been yeah. doing for a long time, you know, I have been figuring out my professional spaces where I sold my computer company. I moved a big portion of my distribution side of things into the computer side, quickly realized that that is not big enough. There's just not enough room in here, and I have a major logistical problem, which is I need to be able to offload huge pallets of product off of semi trucks and then yeah. get it into my space without having to move it by hand. Now my neighbor in this building allows me to use his fork truck, so I can unload things just fine, but I can't get them in the door because my door just simply isn't right. big enough for that. Without tearing the front of the building off and spending tens of thousands of dollars to do so, it would just not make sense. So what made more sense was to go out and find a new space. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but real estate right now is insane. Like, if you want to buy something,
you're not joking.
Or even rent something, it just seemed crazy. And so I am on a couple of like local real estate broker boards where, you know, they post stuff and whatever, and I read, you know, what buildings are for sale and whatever else, and commercial real estate is really hard to come by right now, and which I think is a good thing because, you know,
it's
the economy
yeah.
is moving forward, things are, you know, we're still
people
plugging
are looking
away
local
Yeah, exactly. And I saw a building that had a whole bunch of units in it. It was a development group. It was a bunch of venture capitalist guys that got together and bought like an industrial complex, if that makes sense. So like a bunch of buildings like big buildings that are all subdivided into what they call condominiums down here, like commercial condominiums. Mm-hmm. And they all had overhead doors, and you know, the price was not that reasonable, but it was reasonable enough. And it was in a town about 20 minutes north of where I live. So I was like, okay, that's doable. So I called this broker and I explained to her, you know, what I wanted. And I saw that she had listed these other addresses. And she says, you know what? I am representing the estate of a wealthy guy who just passed away. He's got a unit in one of these buildings, but it's privately owned by him. And it's not being sold through the development group. And because the development group is non-negotiable, she's like, you could literally walk up with a cash deal, $1 less than what they're asking, and they will turn you away.
Wow.
And I was like, okay.
They're pretty sure. So she said,
and they most likely will. Yeah. Every single unit in this building, by the way, is either owned or rented. There's not one empty space other than the space that she was representing. This guy just passed away.
Wow.
The daughter called her and said, like, hey, if anybody's looking, let me know. The day before I called her. She immediately sends me text pictures of this space. It looks like the interior of a McDonald's, whatever, or a Burger King or something. But the guy was like a antique car collector, and he used that space to work on his cars and store them. And so she's like, they're totally, it's the daughter who is the owner. She lives in Seattle. She doesn't want anything to do with it. She just wants to sell it. Yeah. It's got a brand new 5-ton air conditioner.
Wow.
It's got an office space. It's got that horse mat flooring, you know, where that the reason why the floor is red is because it's that soft, not soft, but it's like rubber floor mat.
Like the dimply.
Yeah, I'll end up tearing that out most likely. But
really? You don't think you'd want that?
Pushing carts is hard, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, because of the fork truck and everything, I think what will happen is I'll end up tearing it up because it's like kind of like it just interlocks like puzzle pieces.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but it could get a little tumultuous to drive on it. So we'll have to kind of see. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it also seems like it would be difficult to roll some of my heavier tools on it.
No, for sure. I get that.
You know, so.
So does this place come with a red afro and a big pair of red shoes? Or?
And some white makeup? Yeah, exactly. And a clown nose. No, unfortunately, I don't have
any. Bring your own.
But, yeah, exactly. You got to bring your own clown suit and shoes. But, within about 5 seconds, I was like, okay, I drove up there and looked at it and was sold. I said, I want it, and, you know, and bought it. So
nice.
It worked out. And the thing is it needs some work. You know, there's obviously little issues with it that just need to be rectified before I move into it. But here's what it's going to do is it's going to, I had been making a series of decisions based upon my space here. And it was all, you know, it was like, well, I would love to, order 200 of those, but I have nowhere to
just
put them,
can't.
Nor do I have any way of getting them in my building unless I, one by one, you know, hand them off to someone or roll them in on a pallet jack. And it was impeding my business. And when you start talking about business growth and when you get into like where I would call myself somewhat of a medium-sized business, it's like, you kind of have to not make decisions based on that or fix those problems pretty damn quick. If you don't, you will just get overtaken and that's just the end of it. You can, you know,
but it's funny how we do that, right? Like
it's
so easy to just, find ways to overcome, but not realize that it's limiting you, you know?
Well, it's like baby steps, right? That's the way I looked at
it. Or realize, but not be able to do anything, right? Which is probably more your case.
Well, that was just it. Sitting there with my hands tied going, there's this fantastic opportunity in front of me, but I can't take advantage of it because I'm crippled by my situation.
Right.
So here's my plan B for this, right? So let's just say House Made Industrial crashes and burns, right? I just can't do it anymore. Something happens. I don't even know what. You know, or sales just fall off, you know, and there's just nothing out there for me anymore. I have a really cool fucking workshop now, and yeah. I can do whatever I want in there. It's huge, you know, it's got 20-foot ceilings, huge YouTube studio where I can make any video I've ever wanted to make. I could restore a car in there. There's 100 other uses for this space other than just warehouse and, you know, working in it and whatever for housemates. So it was a win, win, win. And one final awesome piece of information this woman let me in on was she gave me rights of first refusal to the space directly behind it.
Ooh.
So in the contract, it states that I get a 30-day right of refusal to buy that space behind it. Okay.
So is it for sale now?
Okay. It is. And I cannot afford it.
Yeah, so, right. That's the tough part.
Yeah. So I have a few months to generate a bunch of money so that I can actually, you know, buy that space too. Now, what I was thinking was buy that space and just keep it rented out, you know, rent it to the person that's in it.
Pay your mortgage that way, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And then that way, you know, at the time, if we do decide to expand, we just simply knock a wall down and we have twice the amount of room and we have a building you can pull through. So now you can drive all the way through to the other side.
Dude.
Yeah.
So in this space, are there, you know, sort of like homeowner association type laws where, you know, you can't paint the walls orange and red or yellow and red.
anything you want to do on the inside is fine. Like, you know, from the drywall in, you own. But yes, there's definitely restrictions. It's deed restricted. You do pay like a monthly fee to be a part of this like group. But it's a good thing. A lot of people have opinions about HOAs. Riff-raff. I've lived in a lot of shitty neighborhoods that needed HOAs, you know, and, you know, hey, this keeps the riffraff out. I don't mind it. The monthly HOA bill is like a couple. Get this. It's a couple hundred bucks a month. They include water and trash pickup.
Nice.
So right now I pay $100 a month per unit I'm in here and I get nothing. I get zero.
You know, that's
like the ability to be here, basically.
Yeah, and that's nice because normally like an HOA doesn't provide you much other than rules. So for them to include a service or two in there to me is really cool. You know, it's
water and trash is a big deal, especially when you're talking commercial trash.
Hell yeah.
Commercial trash is insanely expensive and
everywhere
they pick up
now,
they empty the dumpster 4 days a week in there. So
That's
really
awesome.
Useful to me because I generate a lot of trash and I, you know, they have,
I'm sure,
believe it or not, there are a lot of boxes and cardboard and packaging and things like that. And we don't have recycling here, so I can't even recycle the cardboard, even if I wanted to.
Man.
In that building, they have a full-on cardboard dumpster where I can just put cardboard. Yeah.
Heck,
so it's a win times a million. It was expensive to do it, but I really do believe in what I'm doing, and I'm going to just keep climbing the ladder every single day and
more
and being better. So
Isn't that the dream?
And then I'm going to move Brian into the space right above my office so he can get there and be secure.
He can
do that.
Make sure the Cisco truck keeps bringing the burgers.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Carve me out a little corner. I'll set up my shop and we'll
or what's the other guy? You could be the Grimace. Is that the other guy?
No, he's the Hamburglar, dude. He's
the
definitely
Hamburglar.
The Hamburglar.
Yeah, the Hamburglar.
I've literally my entire life I've never had a nickname stick. You've got me on Dr. Cone, Sharp Santa, Hamburglar. What the heck?
I love it.
I don't think Hamburglar is going to stick because it doesn't make much sense. But I will say Sharp Santa is definitely – that is – and I like Dr. Cone too. Dr. Cone is fantastic.
Cone.
People now message me and use that terminology. They'll be like, make sure you mention this to Dr. Cone. They're like, okay.
See, a good nickname has to kind of be – not only born out of situations, but also you know,
this is true.
We had two Bryans, so we therefore a nickname was needed. So, you know, it was pretty natural.
I'd
much rather Dr. Cone than, you know, talking
Sharp
to
Santa.
Ben, Brian House, and that jackass.
Yeah. Right. Some other dickhead.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah. So anyway, I really appreciate everyone reaching out and also sending me those nice messages about the Grateful episode that I did, solo episode last week, and that was fun to do. So we might do some more of that. We'll see.
Yeah, but, I really like that for sure.
So, all right, real quick, switching gears, I want to just remind us that we do, in fact, need to dig into the WFI Project Instagram hashtag. If you don't know about that, you should get on there. It is insane. Have you looked at it at all?
It's blowing up.
It's insanely blowing up. It's insane how many people are hashtagging. There was some stuff on there. Let me just pull this up because it was like, I'm like, holy shit. Somebody posted something on there that blew my mind. What was it? So as of today, there's 264 posts based solely on that hashtag.
So now when you search that hashtag, because a lot of times when you use a hashtag, right, it says less than 100 or whatever.
Yeah.
It actually has a number.
Now we're getting up higher in the
100 plus posts. Yep, I see that.
In the ratings there. That's good.
Yeah, if you look through this, what was the one that like blew my mind?
Well, I can talk about one. Oh, you found yours. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Real quick, it was Jamie Blow, who is Jamie the Squid, right?
A regular on this podcast.
He's a regular on this podcast. Regular contributor. He's doing his, I believe. He's doing his ABS Master Bladesmith testing.
And he was bending that knife over.
He bent that knife over, and I'm like, for sure that thing is going to snap. I'm like, because I just can't even believe that anybody can make this happen with a knife. Like, they do a full-on – it was a full-on 90 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
He got that blade to bend, and it didn't snap.
Didn't snap. Perfect.
Blew my damn mind. Yeah, yeah, so Jamie, that was awesome, man.
I don't know if I reached out to him or if maybe it was posted somewhere in the comments, but that was a practice for his ABS.
Okay, practice. Okay. Got it. All right. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. And then it's a Zura maker. He's on the island of Maui in Hawaii. Ooh. If you look, he's the one that posted. It looks almost like a big bullet, and then there's like a ring in front of it. He's hand making these. It's a little ways down, like, because we haven't talked. It was done a day ago, and he listens to the podcast. He must, and I'm not sure who he is, but the stuff coming out of his workshop is insane. Like the Damascus, the rings, all the things he's doing. So really, super super cool stuff. And there's like a 50 of them on here that are all blowing my mind now. The stuff
I know
he's making. Unbelievable.
Let me go ahead and jump on Tyrell Knifeworks. He's, you know, a really high end maker.
I've never heard of him before.
Oh, right.
No. Who's he?
Yeah, he's got this San Mai with Damascus on the outside, copper in the center.
Yes.
So that's a Q Mai and 80 CRV2 core.
He did a video on YouTube on that, and it's got a ton of views.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
First couple of days, I think it's 20,000 or something.
I was just gonna say that I had talked to him, his video on, I don't know if it was this one or another one that looks pretty similar, blew up to 1.2 million views on YouTube.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then somebody shared it on Facebook. One of those large places shared it.
Reshare,
and no. They were at like 5 or 6 million views on Facebook. So I can only imagine what that looks like for his business right now. It's got to be crazy.
Yeah, he doubled his subscribership in like a month.
Ugh.
Just from that one.
Where do I get me some of that?
Well, I think it's because, you know, he'd just been making the same kind of content for a long time.
Yeah.
And then he branched into doing these real heavy pattern Damascus blades, and then he jumped on the QMI sort of trend train, which was, you know, is still going on, and that was what picked it up, and it just went boom, you know.
Yeah,
boom,
baby,
boom.
Dennis, nice work on that, by the way. I
for
see
sure.
He's
I think it's gorgeous.
I see. Come that on, I chatted with him briefly, and he's he's making some big moves. I think he's doing some awesome, awesome stuff, especially in content creation. So
mm-hmm. That's great.
If you're not familiar
large
with
collaborations
stuff,
that he's working on for sure.
Yeah, big collaboration. I caught myself. Couldn't talk about it. I can't talk about it.
Yep.
Sweet.
Gotta be shush, shush.
Gotta keep it on the DL.
I am trying to get my stupid phone to start up here because I was chatting with the guy about a knife he was making, and it should be tagged in our
WFI projects.
Yeah, but of course my phone, literally the minute I jumped on the pod, died, and now
I see
silly battery icon.
All right, well I'll jump in because Rob O'Grady, Rob has been following me. Robert O'Grady, he's been following me now on Instagram for quite some time. And he's legit. I think he's from Ireland, I believe. And I don't doubt it. he's got some pretty good stuff. He made some cool coat hooks, some really artistic stuff, which I appreciate because, you know, I see a lot of knives in my feed. So it's like,
yeah,
whenever I see some like hooks. And
like
shepherd's hooks, you know, the stuff like
that.
Yeah, who
makes
made
those?
One of those, Brian? But you ever made one of those, Brian?
Yeah, maybe. Just yesterday and today.
the consummate shepherd.
What they are alluding to is basically yesterday and today I was filming on a couple of videos where, you know, instead of having
solo
Kyle
filming,
come out, yeah, I was just doing
solo
it all myself.
Filming. Like
I was getting bored. I mean, there wasn't these action shots, you know. Like,
I know,
oh,
right?
He's using
sexy
a friggin' tripod.
Oh, it's
snoozing out here. No, I'm kidding. It was great. You haven't released that video though.
Yet. Oh no, that's okay. Probably gonna be a couple weeks now that I'm gonna post that one. But
when I initially watched it, it's a short. It's like a good short watch. Like
yeah,
it's really good.
3.5, yeah. 4 minutes.
And yeah, just under 4 minutes.
When you said shepherd's hook, I was like, who the fuck shepherds sheep anymore? Like, who's doing this? And then I'm like, oh, it's for hanging stuff. Like, I get it now. Okay, I'm a moron.
Right.
Maybe I should rename it. Maybe I should rename it so people know what I'm talking about.
Brian, I'm a moron. Please don't do that. I don't know what. When I heard shepherd's hook, for some reason, I kept thinking like that was like what, you know, legit shepherds have when they're wandering around with their herds of whatever, wild yak or wildebeest or whatever they heard.
But yeah, so yesterday I was going to be super productive. I had a couple knives lined up, and then I had just the day before heat treated them all, and guess what I left at home at the apartment after putting them in the oven overnight?
You left of the blades.
The entire batch I left at the apartment. So here I am at like 5 a.m. standing in my shop with almost nothing to work on. So
no.
I'm like, well.
Did you drive and go get them or what?
No, I just went content creation mode where at this new apartment, I wanted to make it 2 shepherd's hook hangers to put up a basket of flowers and a bird feeder just to kind of like class up the front of my apartment. And then I also made some little keychains out of scrap Damascus that I've been kind of stockpiling over the years.
Nice.
So,
good idea.
Yeah, I just kind of went balls to the wall on content creation where, you know, filming myself and just trying to learn the editing side of things. Literally,
where'd you do the edit?
iMovie.
Nice.
I did 80% of the editing on my phone in iMovie, and then I flipped it over to my MacBook Air and did the rest, but basically just the little fine tuning type things and then audio on the MacBook.
Yeah.
But it was literally all day today. I was just trying to figure out how to work iMovie to make it work, like basically to make it edit.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just barely got it done today, so I'm happy with it.
Nice. It's it's still a solid program. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I hear even some of the bigger name makers still jump back to iMovie from time to time. And on my phone, I'm usually now LumaFusion, which just keeps getting better and better. It's such like it's a really nice app, if I'm anything under a minute or maybe under 2 minutes, I'm going to do it right on my phone in LumaFusion. And then I recently made the big jump to Final Cut, mostly because I had it. Otherwise, I'd move probably towards Adobe, but Final Cut's pretty... You can get as deep or as as just below the surface as you want is what I
think. Final Cut is all that Kyle uses, my videographer. He's
yeah.
When I told him today, hey, I'm finishing up this video on iMovie, let me send it over to you, and he's like, iMovie, what the hell are you working on that bullshit
right.
for?
Well, because the other stuff costs $1,000, right?
It's like,
well. iMovie will do almost everything Final Cut will do. I was, surprised when I purchased Final Cut, and it was a lot of the same functionality as iMovie. And, we're doing, yeah, at the base level, if you're not doing, like, a lot of animation or, like, chroma key stuff, iMovie's fantastic for just cuts, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, all I'm trying to accomplish with these is... You know, we've got it down to a point where we can release a higher end video that I do with Kyle about once every other week. I'm trying to fill in those weeks that don't get a video with a smaller, somewhere between 4 to 5 minute videos where I'm reviewing things or doing little projects just to try to, stay relevant in the YouTube algorithm.
Yeah. And that also just it fills the space. It gives people something to watch. But it also gives them a little bit of a different take, right? Because I think some folks worry so much about editing style and consistent and all that. But even if you have a little bit of a difference, and you can make that known, like every other week, it's just going to be sort of a rough cut, me doing something. I was listening to Making It the other day, the Making It podcast, where... I guess it was Bob that was really sort of debating about showing too much. And I think he said, I worry about doing all these stories because then I spoil the project and I could potentially spoil the video that comes out because everybody already knows everything about the project, And it was kind of crazy because I was chatting with Jimmy D'Aresta a little bit, and I said, because Jimmy kind of fought back. I said, he's like, I just tell people. He's like, I might not even do the project. The video may never come out, So he's like, I just give a window into my shop. And he's like, I see Instagram stories as like, these are my good friends. Come on into my shop, as if they just showed up. And I think.
So was that Jimmy's take on it then?
Yeah.
Was that it, like what I've been saying is just share everything. Doesn't really matter.
That's
like speaking of Instagram views and how many people bought that video that of me and Dexter has 169,000 views.
Nice. Blowing up over there, Brian. Look at you.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that, like me rolling up the shop door at my new space, that video hit 6,000 views in the first day on Instagram.
Wow.
There you
and
go.
This doesn't make a ton of sense to me because, I'll spend a week putting a video out on YouTube that'll get 2,000 views, and I'm really reconsidering my social media strategy. There's, the tides are turning, the shift in where people, it's exactly what you were talking about, Ben, when, what's his face? The photographer guy was talking about whether or not, what's his name?
McKinnon, Peter McKinnon.
McKinnon was saying, polished versus these basically, like, for lack of a better term, Instagram stories that are being shot and, edited really quickly on a phone. And so the groove I found on Instagram is just quick 1 minute videos of just me sharing my development and my stories, like Instagram stories as posts basically.
Yeah.
And then Instagram just says, give me more of that because that's what they're pushing. The interaction is good. Now that you've convinced me to go over to being a professional account, I'm able to promote and also look at all these different insights, which initially when I got on Instagram, I was annoyed with all of that because I felt like they were trying to get me to spend money in order for my audience to see my work. What I didn't realize was I just didn't have a big enough following yet.
Yeah.
So now that I'm a professional account, it's just like it gets pushed out there. And then they go, hey, for $5 a day, we'll promote this to, say, like 8,000 people.
Yeah.
And I just said, okay, and clicked okay, and then, you know, let them do that. And then that video, I mean, it produced, it's already making conversions for me. So people are coming to my website and buying things because they saw it as a promotion on Instagram. And then Instagram tied my Shopify store into its UI. So now you can click shop now on my thing and you can look at all my products.
Yeah. And so they've recently done that too with the store part is
no
that,
cost.
Yeah. As long as you host your store in a third party, service, right? So you can't, you used to be able to have just a straight up Facebook store and you could host your products just in Facebook and sell directly through Facebook. Well, they did away with that. Now you actually have to have like a Shopify or a Squarespace or something. I don't even think they tie into Etsy that well, but it's interesting. It's I'll be really curious to see, because the one hole that I've seen or I've thought could exist, right, is what about like the theory of evergreen searchable content, you know? And like
for
I
Instagram?
Was well just YouTube? In general, right, if we all start moving towards these shoot from the hip content methods, and then all of a sudden, like, there was a guy on the Modern Craftsman podcast the other day who he did like how-to videos on bathroom renovations and went like deep to where you could sign up for a class with like 40 hours of video or something. And you go, man, what if that guy just moved his stuff into like that Instagram model, you know? Because now
you have to do a blend. I think you would have to do a blended version. So for instance,
I was going
all
to
my
say,
build videos. Oh. Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say there's a happy medium here. And I think for me, it's, you know, a lot of shoot from the hip on the process. Like while you're going through, show off as much as you can of your process to get there. But as soon as you get to that final stage where you have a finished product, that's the point where you do a really nice polished post to, you know, show off that pretty end. Because, you know, if you think about it, shoot from the hip, you want to see kind of like, oh, wow, this is the grungy, you know, middle stages. And then when you're at the end, that's the point where polishing it up and making it look really good and spending that extra time is going to pay off, because you've already gotten it to the point where it itself is itself polished.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of,
I think
you're
for
me, that's my thoughts on it.
And I think there's two different audiences too. You know, like, I'll be completely honest. My first thought when Bob on Making It started saying like, you know, I don't want to show too much. I don't want to show all these people, you know, give away the goods. And my first thought was like, well, you're pretty damn confident that your video is going to be that good, right?
Well, it is,
you know,
Bob,
it's like,
Claggett. I mean,
it is,
you know,
Bob.
It's a lot
if
of
it
views.
Was anybody else. But, you know, every now and then, you know, an episode before, a couple episodes before, they're talking about videos that flopped. And it's like, well, what if the video does flop? You know, maybe in your stories, you can massage the storyline to an extent to where people then are interested enough to go see it when it comes out. Or potentially it's two totally different audiences that you're engaging with, right? Like, just because I watch, say, Jimmy's stories every day or every other day or whatever it is, that doesn't mean I'm going to watch every one of his YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be honest, I probably haven't watched a Jimmy Duresta YouTube video in a while.
You're missing out, dude. His
stuff
has been really good.
He does some really
cool. You got to get back into it. You get his stuff.
And
you
I
can.
Will.
And his, they're really short. You know, they're like 6 to 8 minutes now.
Yep.
But man,
but
his
I think it's,
stuff.
It is really good, and I think it's he was one of my inspirations for really ramping into content creation and, you know, getting my shop to where it is today.
Yeah,
and there's no doubt, like, the way he speeds up videos makes everything look five times easier, you know?
Yes, for sure.
So true.
That alone drives you. But I think just an interesting juxtaposition there, right, is that there probably will be folks that just follow along with a build in your stories and may never make that jump to watch the final video. And so in that case, you've engaged both audiences. Mm-hmm. Otherwise,
you're kind of ignoring one.
And I think Jason Bent from Bent's Woodworking has said that numerous times, that the folks on his who watch his Instagram stories are what he considers to be his closest followers, right?
Sure.
And so if you engage them, they want to see the true behind the scenes. They don't, you know, they don't want the ums and ahs edited out. They just want the whole enchilada. So it's like,
this is all good stuff to be processing, because I have this dilemma where, you know, I'm on YouTube, my stuff is all polished and beautiful, 4K, all the lights and the microphones and stuff. And then I haven't made a video like that in a long time, like over a month. And it's because my shop looks like a bomb blew up in there because I'm in the process of moving. I got all, you know, distribution stuff going on, and it has not affected sales at all. Like me not making a YouTube video, even though if you look at my analytics, you would think that it would cause an issue.
Yeah.
It does not. It has not made a problem for me there yet. But at the same time, now that I have this professional account, I now get all the analytics from Instagram and my Shopify site, because they're connected now, so that I can see where my conversions are coming from. And I'm getting just as many from Instagram as I was from YouTube. And I could say that that's heavily related to how much attention I have been giving Instagram, and how much attention I gave YouTube for so many years.
Now,
I need to find that balance between the two.
I have an idea for you, Brian. I was watching and talking to Gentry Knives, if you've seen some of his stuff. He has been putting out some videos where he just stands in front of his shop area and just talks about a process for, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, and, you know, really dives deep into it, but just stands there and talks. I mean, your shop, if it looks dirty, it means like it's an interesting background for people to kind of search through while you're talking about a certain thing that you need. Now,
sure.
I think that could be a really easy, quick put together. You know, you already have your rack of, lights and cameras and all that stuff. You know, just to set that up real quick and spend a half an hour to put together a quick 5 to 10 minute, park and bark style, video, I think would
even
do really well on your channel.
Even if you added like clips in of parts of the process, right, where it's like one tool, one light, and you don't have to worry about the mess as long as you can get to the one tool. I do that a lot, actually. I've been doing that.
Contrary to popular belief, I don't like the sound of my own voice or my own face. So, no, I'm kidding. You're right. I don't know. I feel like that is a very good suggestion, but at the same time, I think, like, I'm expected to produce like these, these opus videos. I did set
the bar. You set the tone, right, and the bar. Yeah. And we've talked about it on this show before, and I think you and I both have admitted that, that ability to start a project on Monday and have the video done on Friday is really hard for me. I got something sitting on the CNC right now that I started carving over a week and a half ago. And it's like, that may get done this week. It may probably not. But I'd like to carve five other things, so I might pull it off of there and start it again later, And then I got 3/4 of a damn video shot,
Sure.
Okay.
Speaking of Ben, do you want to talk about what we've been talking about behind the scenes?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I've been behind the scenes poking away at the shop scalpel. Not the shop scalpel, but the original that Brian cone made, and we were doing a collab where I would make the handle, and I have simplified my process, and yeah, I think that video, well, that video is going to be coming out this weekend.
So what's your plan for that? Is it going to be a product that you produce, or is it just going to be the video and that's it, or will you make them for people?
Well, I think for now it'll be the video, and then maybe, you know, sort of evolve.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Evolving potentially into maybe what we got going on with the scalpel project or something like that. We haven't really gotten that far.
Well, the original plan with it was, you know, this was literally my in with you guys, where I just hit up Ben and talked like, hey, you know, let's do this little collaboration, kind of get my foot in the door, talk to you guys. And I made it, shoot, I don't even remember how long ago. But the idea, right? Well, I think I had a sweatshirt on in the video that I shot, so it must have been at least cooler weather. But
yeah.
But anyways, so you know, I made the Damascus scalpel portion of it, sent it off to Ben to do the handle process. But this is a collaboration that's been in the works, and you know, this is, I mean, it's very similar to, you know, the shop scalpel that we're working on as a trio to put out. But I'm just super excited to finally have that video out to show off to people.
Yeah. But. And I'll give you a little hint. So like I mentioned, I simplified the process down. As you guys know, I was messing around with all this crazy epoxy stuff and all these crazy ideas. And in the end, I'm like, you know what? Let's just back up. Let's just go really, you know, simple, nice wooden handle. I've been playing, still in my play around with epoxy. I took a piece of felt, just a regular old piece of felt, you know, like a 12 by 12 chunk of felt that you would get at a craft store, basically. I stuffed it in a Ziploc bag, and then I poured some epoxy in there to sort of saturate the felt. And then I took the whole Ziploc and I stuck it in my woodworking vise, which has, you know, a set of jaws on it that are about 8 inches deep by, 18 inches wide. You know, just two big pieces of wood coming together, basically. So I stuffed it in there and then basically screwed it down pretty tight. And it is pretty damn awesome what you get in the end. So I've got, I'm actually holding it
down. It sounds like almost like a micarta liner or something.
Exactly. Yeah, cool. So now I've got this orange, like 6x6 piece of epoxy, felt encased in epoxy.
Right.
And I thought, when you sand it, it's going to be all fuzzy and everything. No, man, it is as clean and crisp as a micarta liner. I mean, it is really, really cool. And you don't have to worry about dyeing the fab, you know, no dyes, no nothing. You just find the color felt you want. And then, I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm going to try that to get a couple layers, you know? So I've been playing around a little bit with that, just stuffing shit in Ziplocs and throwing a little bit of epoxy in there. And I wasn't sure, honestly, you know, because you're trapping all the air in there and everything else. And I thought, well, I'll probably get bubbles or get voids or something will go wrong. But no, I mean, the entire piece of felt that was saturated with epoxy came out as one solid piece. And it's under an eighth inch thick, you know.
Okay. So, that's awesome.
Folks are looking for an easy way to make liners. That's about as easy as I can think.
This is a piece that you're putting on the knife that we made together.
That'll probably be my liner, actually. It will be the liner.
I'm excited to see what you film of that process and actually, you know, see that process happen. Because I'm definitely going to replicate that for sure.
Yeah, got all that filmed, and that'll be included in the video. And then, like I said, the handle is just going to be – it's such a small handle, you know.
It is.
That's what's kind of weird. And so there's not – I almost, in some ways, for, like, my first knife handle, I almost wish it were bigger. Because smaller is not always easier, you know.
No, it's
kind
not.
Of a weird, kind of a weird size and shape and – did a little bit of CNC work on it as well. So, yeah, it should be good.
Oh, man.
Should
be I'm good. So excited to see how that turns out. Oh,
should
my goodness.
Be good. Me too. I hope it sands out well in the end and all that.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
So this should be released sometime around 2023, like maybe like July, somewhere in there,
somewhere
2023.
In there.
We're shooting for Saturday.
Shit. All right. Very good. I can't wait.
2200 hours, on Saturday.
Well, listen, all right, switching gears real quick. We're almost an hour in, if you can believe it. We haven't chatted in almost 2 weeks, so we're an hour in, which, by the way, means that we're in trombone territory. I don't know if you've got your trombone with you.
Let me warm up for just a second.
Warm up the bone.
He's got to get that bone worked up and working it out. And so this particular, I've got a couple of dad jokes that came to me from Brigham Kindle. And Brigham, I don't know if I'm saying your name right, because I heard Jeff Fader call you Brigham Kindell, which maybe is how you pronounce your last name. So you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I always see it as Brigham Kindle. But
yeah, that's the way that I thought it would be said, but whatever. Yeah.
Fader has a way of getting those last names right.
Yeah, I think he might be. He may be right, more right than I am. So that never occurred to me. But all right, you ready there, Brian?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, did you guys know that Lance is a very uncommon name nowadays?
I did not.
Back in medieval times, people were called Lance a lot. That one was hard to deliver. I'm just saying that was a very tough
one.
That was hard. It's coupled
everything.
With a screenshot. It's like a meme of I believe this a screenshot is what's that John Cleese movie? The guy that wrote all the funny medieval movies. It's merely a flesh wound.
I know what you're saying. I know
the Holy Grail.
Monty Python. Monty
Python and the Holy Grail. I believe that's what that screenshot is from. He actually sent me another one. I'm going to read it right now because this one's actually almost a little bit better. It says, I don't make jokes about lazy people. You know why?
Why?
They never work. What up? That's pretty good. I like that one.
That is good.
So, Brigham, we appreciate you sending in your dad jokes.
Yeah.
My calendar is straight up out of dad jokes, like terrible dad. Every single time I flip my calendar over and I read the next dad joke, I'm like, I can't share this. This is pure crap. I have standards, and I cannot break those standards for cheap-ass dad jokes. We're going to tell the best of the best, only the best of the best. Yeah. So,
curated
anyway.
for you on the Work For It podcast.
Right.
For $4.99 a month, you can get the best dad jokes around. Just go to housemaid.us. Subscribe today. All right. Hey, you guys want to hear a story? I've got a kind of a really interesting story about buying some heavy equipment. All right.
Let's hear it.
So, you know, I got the new building and I need a fork truck.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Because I take all these pallets of steel off of the trucks. I got to drive them in, blah, blah, blah. I have some very specific requirements that need to be met. I'm getting quite the education on fork trucks and even more so an education on how to buy a used fork truck.
Okay.
I did not know this, but the used fork truck sort of economy is huge.
They're like gold, right? They're gold. Easy to get.
So yeah, they're tough to find right now. Anything heavy equipment is pretty tough to come by. It just seems like inflation is taking over. Everybody's buying stuff up or whatever.
Yeah.
But so when you type in like, hey, I'm looking for a used forklift on Google or whatever, there's just all these websites that pop up and there's, you know, there's like inventory and pictures and you can go to eBay. You can buy one, you know, that like equipment trader type websites and stuff like that. So it's very daunting. You're literally in a sea of vendors who sell used equipment. But here's one thing I have just found out is that there's really not that many actual fork trucks for sale. There's not like these, like this, you know, there's just millions of them out there. So I get involved with a company. I'm not going to say their name. They're in Colorado. The guys over there are super nice. They seem super pro. You like read their Google reviews. They, for the most part, have pretty decent Google reviews, like over 100 five-star reviews. But then in the recent months, there's like a whole bunch of like one-star reviews, and they're really specific.
Sign
right?
up for that Google My Business. Get yourself listed, boys.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, right? So I decide that they've got a fork truck that is – that meets my needs. It's not the cheapest one out there, but it's not the most expensive, you know, somewhere in the middle. And I feel like I've got a nice rapport going with this sales guy. In fact, you know, we're texting back and forth even, you know, this is how business is done now.
Yep.
And so I said, fine, send me all the paperwork and I'll, you know, get you a deposit and we'll get this deal done. And the whole time I'm asking him like, well, you know, and can you send me some pictures of this? I kind of want to see, you know, whatever. And it would take like a day or two. And I'm like, and he kept telling me like, oh yeah, you know, the guys have the truck in the warehouse out back and, you know, I got to go move a bunch of stuff and whatever else. Right.
Then getting do it.
Sketchy.
And then,
then go
the paperwork
do it.
All came.
Give me a picture.
Yeah. 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 Right. I'm like, how hard is this to take a photo of something? Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, so it just seemed very sketchy initially, like for a bit. But I'm like, I looked them up. They have Facebook accounts. Like all this, like they seem like, and even some of the reviews call him out as their salesperson. He has a very specific name.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, this would be really tough to fake, right?
Yeah.
It's like impossible, you know? So then I get all the paperwork, but there's the whole time I have been asking him, what year is this fork truck? Because, and here's the, and I'm going to tell you the reason why the fork truck market is so profitable, because there's no titles for fork trucks or this kind of heavy, right? So you can legit like find fork trucks anywhere, buy them, sell them. There's no record of this these transactions. So there's, you know, there's no trail. So then finally I get the paperwork. There's still no year on it. And so I respond to him. I said, you know, I know this sounds very odd, or maybe this isn't an odd question, but like, I want to know what year this thing was made.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you could tell me the hours and everything else. His response was, we don't know.
Okay.
We think it's between 1999 and 2003, but we're not sure. And I'm like, okay. So I look at the paperwork and there's a scan of an old document, and it's got the serial number on it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I should be able to find the year on the serial number, right? You would think. I type the serial number in, and another website for a different forklift truck company comes up.
Oh.
I click on it. And it's all the same photos this guy had seen.
Oh, man.
But wait, it gets better. This fork truck is $6,000 less than the agreed price that I just told the guy that I would pay him, right?
You're like, so, I want that price.
Yeah, I would like that price. So I dial the phone. I at this point, I'm like not screwing around. I'm like, right. I need a freaking fork truck. And we're not talking small dollar amounts here. These are expensive pieces of equipment.
Roughly how much, if you could put a round number on it?
Between 10 and 20,000.
Damn.
Who?
Okay. So I call this phone number. It's a Wisconsin, like near where my sister lives. It's a Wisconsin company, whatever. I tell the lady who answers the phone, I said, I know this is going to sound odd, but I'm in the middle of buying a fork truck that I think you guys have, but it's not from your company. She goes, hold, please. Click. Puts me on hold. This guy comes on the phone. He goes, yeah, you've been dealing with so-and-so out in Colorado, right? And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, they don't actually have the Ford truck. I have it. And I said, okay, so am I buying it from him or am I buying it from you? And he says, well, I sold that Ford truck in July.
Whoa.
And I went, okay. And then he says that Ford truck is still here, though.
Oh.
And I went, huh.
That's why you can't get pictures.
So, right. So the fork truck is actually in Wisconsin. Here's what I learned is that I wasn't being scammed per se, but these guys are brokers. And here's what they do. They go and they scour the internet. They find all this heavy equipment. They take the prices. They mark it up 20-30%. Yeah. They put it on their own website.
Their sales fee.
What's crazy is they took all of their photos and they really decent Photoshop job of removing all of the logos of the guy, that was actually selling it. Cause this guy takes pictures of his fork trucks in front of his building with his banner and his signage and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All of that banner and signage was Photoshopped, removed, like gone.
Wow.
So this guy proceeds to tell me on the phone that they got in bed with these guys out in Colorado who are selling fork trucks. And that this is what they do. And they had, because they were, this guy was in Wisconsin. He was, locating all this equipment. He was warehousing it. They were like a preferred vendor for them. So they were all in bed together for a long time. And then he went out there and he saw like these guys, they don't have warehouses. They don't have anything. They work from home and they all drive Lamborghinis and Ferraris and Maseratis. And he was like, this is like all my money is going to these guys essentially. And they're driving the market of this heavy equipment up because they're basically creating websites with all this great SEO and they're driving all the sales to them. They're, juicing the prices and then they're flipping it. They never ever see the fork trucks. So these guys don't even know what they're selling. They have no idea.
And if they're that sleazy, how many times do you think that fork truck has been sold?
Yeah.
Because there's no title, you don't know.
Right.
And see, that's the thing. So, and here's the other thing. So what they do is this guy in Wisconsin, he buys fork trucks from all over the place, has them delivered to his place. He has them serviced. And then, he goes through them. He has all the guys look, make sure everything's good. And then they put paint on them. So they paint them the original color. So they look really good. Like they look like really clean. The problem is you're buying a 20 some plus year old piece of equipment and you don't know because they won't tell you how old that thing is.
Yeah.
Now there are hour meters on these things, but you and I know hour meters can be modified very easily or dashboards can be swapped out. All kinds of things can be changed over. So you don't fully know what the hell you're buying. And then I realize that there's a seedy underbelly to this thing. So I'm talking to this guy in Wisconsin. He's telling me look, just buy one through me. He's like, I can't sell you this one because it's technically already purchased. Yeah. And I'm like, it wouldn't have been me because I wasn't looking in July.
Yeah,
I never bought this Ford truck from these people. He's like, well, if you gave him any money, you should try to get it back. I said, I did my research. Can you imagine if I did not type in that serial number?
Yeah,
I would not know, right?
Yep.
I guarantee you crazy. Those guys are scamming people getting those deposits.
Somehow, right?
Ugh.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're in the market for big equipment or whatever, just try to find the source of where it's being sold from. And the other thing is I'm now looking on eBay because eBay, you're probably going to pay a little bit more, but there's a rating system and you're somewhat protected through eBay.
eBay,
you know, if you buy something there and you get screwed over, you know, you have some recourse.
You can screw back.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, eBay will actually
read other people's experiences.
Yeah, won't eBay actually like refund or something? There's some kind of a clause.
That depends. Yeah, I would imagine there's some
for that kind of money. There's probably all kinds of clauses included.
Santa clauses. So I could not believe that. It blew my damn mind that this guy, you know, talking with him on the phone, he was like me and you. I mean, just such a pleasant dude. And oh yeah, I'm going to go back to the warehouse and, you know, get those photos for you. No problem. And then texted me on Friday night. Hey, buddy, I'm out camping with my friends, and sending me photos of him sitting next to getting all chummy with me.
Yeah. When you're doing that shit, like, I don't care if you're technically scamming someone or not. You know, you are. You're still scamming, you know. It's like you're misrepresenting the product to an extent. You know, like, he could have just told you, like, look, this thing actually lives up in blah blah blah, and we bought it from this dude, and so he's got it. You know, like that. That's easy None enough that. To understand, you know?
Yeah. If this guy would have told me he's a broker and he goes out and sources the best fork trucks in the world or whatever, and he you know, he never really gets eyes on them, but he guarantees, I would have gone with him. I would have bought it. But
yeah, if you just
now
put
that
it
I
that
found
way.
Out.
That's the difference of being upfront with your people and being a jackass who's, you know, just being sleazy. You know, there's two roads of life, and hopefully the three of us have chosen the right one.
This is my next story, was that I was telling you guys, I'm selling House-Made Industrial. We're just going to start selling forklifts on the internet. So it's housemadeforklifts.com. So just go there, and I source the best fork trucks in the world. Now, there must be so much freaking money in this.
I'll take my Lambo now. If I could get that in black, please.
Can I get my logo on the side, please? What the frick, man. I felt dirty after that.
I felt dirty.
Like, I almost fell for this. Like, I was about ready to click the buy it now button on the invoice that guy sent me. And here's the last little bit that I'll tell you how I know this guy's so full of shit. Is about like 10 minutes before we were recording the podcast. I haven't responded to any of his texts since this morning. He wrote me, "Hey, I got another person who is interested in that fork truck, and they've signed the agreement, but we don't have a deposit yet. So if you want it, you better get that over to me right away."
Come on.
Does this guy think this I was born really fucking yesterday?
This is starting to sound like one of those calls that gets grandma on the phone. Like, this guy is a real shyster.
Shyster. And the bad thing is that he's so good at it.
Yeah.
You know, like, he was so good at it. And if I didn't do my research, I would have just given this guy $5,000 for making a phone call and sending a few texts.
Sell a pig a fucking ham sandwich.
I'm actually going to hire him and have him start selling grinders.
Right? Yeah.
you want to make a decent living and you want to do it honestly, he starts selling grinders. Jesus. Good Lord Almighty. I'm telling you.
So, some speaking people. Of kind of sketchy situations, you want to talk about that shop I was looking at?
Yeah, the Haunted Workshop. How's
that?
Yeah,
so I actually got in contact with them again. They have done a lot of work on the property.
Hey.
They've completely redone the roof, which is nice. And they're back currently putting in the septic tank in the back. They're putting money into it. You know, my initial read was originally like, oh my gosh, this is way too far to be, you know, it's way too far gone to actually come back. But it seems like the guy is putting in the money to make it workable. So
you think his rent will go up, or is he going to honor his...
You know, I don't know. I haven't signed anything, of course. I'm waiting until, you know, everything's done, and then we can assess where we're at. But, you know, if that comes together... You
technically
know,
Brian, he can't call it a building if it only has three walls.
Right? And then it becomes a shed, a lean-to.
Yeah, it's kind of like a carport that used to be a building. Yep. I mean, did he fill that back wall in yet, or
is
still there?
That is still needing to be done. So
I mean, he's kind of doing things backwards a little bit.
That's totally my thought on it. It's like
first you build the walls, then the roof.
Right, you're putting in the final coat of paint before you, you know, build the wall itself. You know,
yeah, this, exactly.
This total, you know, cart before the horse. But
listen here, Brian, the toilet's flush, but they're going to freeze over come March because, right. You know, the wall isn't going to be finished. I get it, though. You probably have to put a septic tank in now while the ground is soft. I think that's probably what he was thinking.
But, you know, I don't know. But
who knows?
Hey, the haunted house is not quite, you know, gone yet. It could still be a thing.
I think it should be. I mean, you know my take on it. Tons of opportunity to make awesome content in there. It's huge space.
And
you know,
it's got that old school
vibe. We
can,
like, Photoshop ghosts into the windows and stuff. Like, all kinds of stuff. And come Christmas, you can sit on the front porch in your Santa suit. You can give away gifts to all the kids in the neighborhood and all the drunks that are coming out of that bar across the street.
There you go.
We'll make it happen for sure.
Dude.
Speaking of gifts, Brian, did you get a package from me yet?
I didn't.
Oh.
Oh, you sent me. Oh, you know what? I haven't checked the mail today. You know, my mail goes into like a bin at the end of the street, so I'll have to go look at it.
Well, we'll talk about it on the next. You know, we'll talk about it on the next podcast. Let me
I did get a gift from Mark Vanderwerf.
Oh, yeah?
I saw that.
Okay, dude. He sent me one of his handmade leather keychains.
Yeah.
And then he messaged me a couple days later after he listened to the podcast last week, and he says, you can put your new shop keys on there. And I was like, you know what, man? That's
there
a great idea. I'm going to put my new keys on there for my new building.
Yeah.
And,
that's cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be an awesome adventure, I think, over there. So I'm excited, and I'm gonna have a fork truck. I'm gonna be driving that thing all over the place. I'm gonna be commuting in that thing.
There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
So how far is the new place compared to your old place from the house?
Same commute. It's like I end up driving 20 some minutes south into downtown here, Naples, where my spaces are now, and then it literally, instead of going south, I turn north and go 20 minutes. So here's one of the things I'm really excited about is that Naples, the industrial park that I'm in now, it doesn't have really any true industry here. There's like cabinet makers.
That's the way Boise is.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, you can't just like turn a corner and find, like, unless you're like the guys right next to me are aluminum fabricators, but pretty much everybody else in this building is like an interior designer or landscape architect. One guy's a pest control company. So there's not like really true industry in here.
Yeah.
And then, but when you go to my new building, everyone in there has CNC and lasers.
There
and,
we go.
You know, there's machine shops.
Yep.
So I feel like, yes, exactly. So I feel like, you know, just via proximity, I'll have a lot more opportunity there to connect with people who are going to further excel what I'm up to.
Now, is there...
So, you know, yeah.
Is there... Because it seems like just... And I haven't seen the outside, actually, but it seems to me like your last space was more of sort of a retail type location, whereas this space doesn't have like a storefront, does it? Or does it?
It does. It has like I haven't shown any images of that, but it's got just to the right of that door, from the video you saw on Instagram, the door opens up and to my left, there's like a wall right there. That's like a small office space and it has like a glass storefront.
Okay.
Okay.
So just kind of a small, that's cool though. That's,
yeah. That door will remain locked. I mean, you know, I put no soliciting signs up. I don't need people coming and going out of here.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... And there's a lot of foot traffic up there because there's so many other buildings in there. So,
yeah.
But I hesitate to even put my signage on, you know, put anything that even identifies me, you know, because I just don't want people coming in there.
You'll get hordes of YouTube fans trying to pound down your door.
Yeah, right. Well, I doubt that. I just think people are nosy. They like wandering in. Oh, by the way, did I tell you guys? Remember when I was talking about how people were wandering into my shop because they thought it was a post office?
Mm-hmm.
No.
So awesome. Kenny, the guy from the aluminum place next to me, he goes, "Hey, listen, I know why that happens." And I was like, "Wait, what?" He says, "It happens to us too." they come into our spot and they're like looking for a post office. And I'm like, he's like, when I heard you That's talking about funny. It, he's like, I could not believe that somebody else had the same experience. And I said, yeah, well, we're in the same building. I guess that makes sense. So he took a picture of the street sign out by Domestic, which is the street that runs right by our shop. And it says Progress on the sign.
What?
It doesn't say, it's huge. It says Progress and an arrow pointing right down our street. No fucking wonder people think it's Progress. There's a huge sign that says Progress on it. And that's the street that the post office is on. So no wonder people are confused. So he mystery solved, I guess, you know, city infrastructure is all screwed up, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you'll be out of there here pretty soon. Alone. So, you know.
Whatever. Yeah, my plan is I think I'm going to save the studio space, the one that I record in. I'm going to keep that and maybe rent it out or something. And then the other space, I think I'm going to sell it. And then if I can get enough for this space, the little old computer shop, I will purchase that other unit, you know, the one that's in the building right next to me, so I can expand later on.
Nice.
That's kind of my plan, yeah.
Become the
dude. That is gonna be so cool when it's done. I'm so excited to see it.
Yeah. I'm gonna have so the one of the cool things about having a fork truck is you can buy a basket that goes on the forks, and it's got like you can put a person in it.
Yeah.
I was gonna say hammock.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, you could do a hammock too. But this, like for this particular instance, is like when I go to paint the space, I'm just gonna rent one of those big air sprayers, those paint sprayers, put Dexter in the bucket. And just lift them up there and just have them start going to town spraying the walls.
I'll tell you, get that those Burger big King sprayers motif. Are clutch, man. Like I've got a smaller sized HVLP, but those ones where you stick a 5 gallon bucket under it, you know.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
I used that to when we did our addition, our whole second floor addition, and we had a lot of walls and ceilings to paint. And man, it made such short work of that. It's awesome. Totally.
Yeah, it's like a
2 foot
or a 3 foot swath of paint.
Yep.
You can just, and then of course you're not reloading a roller, which takes
a lot of time. Here's a tip for you. And I learned this from the guy that I hired to paint the outside, because I wasn't going to paint the outside, but I'd paint the inside. When you're done with spraying it, he actually recommended going over it with a roller and always pulling down so that your stroke always finishes down. Otherwise, you get like baseball field stripes. Mm. And I was surprised.
Interesting. Okay.
And he said, what that'll do is that'll even out your spray if you have thicker spots or thinner spots or whatever. He said, number one, it evens all that out. And number two, it makes sure that when the light hits it, that you don't have paint, you know, going up, down, up, down, up, down. So he just, and I got a big ass roller. I found a big long one. I don't remember where I found it. It was almost 18, 20 or more inches. And
it's
just
my favorite.
Yeah.
I use those two.
Had that.
You get them at Home Depot now.
Yeah. Oh, nice. And I just pulled down, you know, just start at the top, pull down, start at the top, pull down. And I'll tell you,
just use like a thin nap, right? Like
like a 3/8 or less, quarter inch or something. Yeah. Just, you know, load that with paint once, and I kind of rolled it off on a naked wall, you know, that didn't have any paint on it yet. And so it just had a little bit of paint on it, and away you went. It was pretty slick.
Boat builders use that same technique, and they call it roll and tip.
Okay.
So like it's the opposite of what you're saying. They don't spray. They roll the paint on and then they brush it down.
Okay.
They tip it with the brush. And it's the exact same technique that you're describing, and you go from top to bottom.
All right.
So
you go from
basically the deck to the water line, and then you pick the brush back up because there's no lines, you know, there's nothing there left there. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And that's a really good tip, because I have a lot of walls to paint in there, and it's huge. It's 20 foot tall walls, and the space is 25 by 50.
That's a big space.
Big space.
Yeah.
Big space.
See, I think you need to paint, just leave a corner of the old, just to have like a little grill in that corner, just for and a there little you grill go. Station.
Little lunch.
A little grill station. Like a little French fryer in there, hey, like man. A little personal fryer. I'm with you, man. I like it. I gotta say that was the one thing that, and whenever, you know, I've bought a lot of properties, so, but I know paint is cheap. You know, it's like, well, yep. you don't look at the color. You know, you just gotta look at the structure and the mechanicals and whatever else. And I walked in there and I was like, ew. Yeah, this is all gonna need to get painted.
It's
and
funny
she's like,
how
yep,
that
yeah.
puts it in your head, though. You know, like, cause you can know all that stuff, like brand
cannot
new,
see it.
Brand new HVAC and big shop doors and all, like all the positives. But then it comes that paint, sure, yeah. Well, I think I've said it on the show before, right? Like my mom has always said that. You know, like, what do these people have against a $25 gallon of paint? Mm-hmm. You know.
Yep. Yeah, one of the smartest guys that I ever met told me that people buy paint jobs.
Yeah.
And what he meant by that was cars and houses.
Yep.
He's like, if you can make it look good with paint, it will sell.
It'll sell.
And he's right. He was right. I did that a lot. Yeah, curb appeal.
See, speaking of, that is what Jason Hartwell over at the Hustle and Grind podcast, his knife business isn't as, you know, booming as he needs in his life. So he's starting a little, basically his business partner is buying a bunch of cars and he's putting a paint job and doing, you know, minor fixes on it. And they're starting up basically a car flipping situation.
I heard
and
him say
I
that.
I guarantee you he would agree with you that a good paint job sells a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely does. Yeah, of course. I didn't realize that was happening. I've been sharing his auctions and stuff like that with his knives and stuff. So, yeah, it's, you know, starting any business is, you got to have like a war chest. I mean, I did. Basically, when you start a business, you got to know that you're going to lose money for more than a year. I don't care what you're doing. I mean, if you're making money in the first year, you're in like the top 1%, I would think, of people that are successful. You know, it takes so much to energy and input before you get any output. I feel for him, but it's totally normal. Totally normal part of the process. So,
and I think it's good to admit that too, you know, like sometimes you got to step back a little and there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean it's a failure, right? It's a huge leap to go from being a hobbyist, you know, getting $1,000 a job under the table to actually making it a legit business, you know. It's a big
That's
jump.
That's what I'm finding.
Yeah. All right, so Brian, just real quick, not to dig into it too much, but like, you know, you seem to be in a like somewhere in the middle where you're full time. You know, you're not, you don't have employment in any other way, but you're also in a space where you're kind of. You know, your girlfriend or your fiance now, I should say, right?
Girlfriend,
not fiance. I thought she was
close.
Your fiance.
Getting
there. All right. And you and her kind of splitting the bills a little bit. So you're, you know, you've got some support and you'll, if you listen to, and there's a lot of guys out there that'll talk about this and some of them are just, you know, they won't talk about it, but, you know, like Craig talks about how his wife is the primary earner, you know, and that he's blessed to have a wife that does that. And so that he can do chop knives and take care of the kids and whatever else. And there's a bunch of bladesmiths out there that are in that same position. And in fact, you know, when I met Sarah, I was, you know, kind of in that same space, you know, I wasn't doing all that great financially. And she supported me and said like, hey, do your thing, figure it out. So behind every great man is an even better woman. That's the way I look at it. Look at it that way.
In my situation, luckily I am getting enough profit from my knife business where I can, of course, you know, it pays for itself. All the materials and all of the, you know, all that stuff pays for itself. And it is just enough for me to pay my own half of the bills. Luckily, you know, one of the reasons why we're in this apartment is because it was so dirt cheap and... You know, luckily, you know, we're able to live very minimally and kind of save up. But I do have, you know, Emily does, you know, pretty much cover all of the, you know, food costs, and we are saving quite a bit to try to get a head start on finding a house in a couple years. But, you know, luckily she finished her master's degree, so she is, you know, kind of in a decent, you know, way where, you know, she can be in a
put a ring on that
paying.
Brian,
yeah, no, I'm trying.
Yeah, man. What's going don't on let her here? Get away.
I'm
brother.
Paying my the problem is I'm paying the bills and there's not a whole lot left over. Literally, yeah, the yeah. next couple thousands I get, you know, I'm putting a ring for sure. So I don't know if she's listening, thing. Emily. You know,
yeah, yeah, girl.
Yeah, make sure she doesn't listen. You want it right. to be a surprise. I suppose but, she probably. You guys have talked about it, but here's the thing. Sure. I will say, if you're doing what you say you're doing, and I believe you, I think you're already a success. So just yeah. know that from this point forward, you're just going to have to essentially find that the middle ground in everything that you do. So like, let's just say you profit $200 on a knife, right? Sure. So after all said and done, you sell the blade, you get $200 in your pocket. Next knife you sell, find out, how do I make 210? And yeah. climb what I use the term climb the ladder. Every single thing you do, you're learning how to do it more efficiently and how to profit from it better, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't have to turn that 200 into 400 right away.
Right.
That's sure, not right. realistic. A lot of people think, oh, yeah. now I need to double my profits or, you know, 50%, whatever it is. Look, it is a stepping stone. Every single thing you do should be based in efficiency, changing things up, and then figuring it out from that point forward that, okay, so maybe, you know, in 5 years, you've got a person helping you, you know, you've got better marketing, you're a personality, people are really paying attention to what you're doing. You just have to continue doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people give up before they even get halfway there or even yeah. 10% of the way there. They sure. give up because it's very disheartening.
Yeah,
for
but
sure.
you sound like you're already in a successful space. I mean, if you're already yep. paying the bills, dude, congratulations.
Hell yeah,
bro.
Dude.
I'm not kidding you. That's a Seriously. Big deal, man.
I don't know because, you know, right now I'm kind of getting to the point where, you know, it would be really nice to be able to go above and beyond the bills just a little bit. So I'm looking sure. at maybe getting like a small part-time job just to fill in between now and where that success really starts jumping off. But then on the other hand, you know, that will take away 30 hours of my week that I could be spending on getting closer to that success. So yeah. there's this weird, you know,
that's a
you
good
know,
point.
Back and forth in my mind where it's like, do I, you know, jump on an easy job and just try to make that work for a year? Or do I, you know, really go balls to the wall and live kind of, you know, try to continue to live below my means so that I can keep saving and trying to make these goals happen? I don't know, man. It's a trade-off for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I could.
Well,
see
only
that.
You can answer that. You know,
yeah, for sure.
I think if you the advice I give you is all anecdotal because you know, I'm not yeah. you, but I will say that. I'm a big fan of taking the risks, and if you're already where you are, my advice would be to continue moving forward yeah. and spending your time on pursuits that will be your own and yeah. not working for someone else. Now,
yeah.
if you, you know, told me like, hey, man, there's no food in the fridge, you know, that's a different
yeah,
story.
For sure.
You know, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. So I think, you know, if it were me, I wish I had done it sooner. You know, I spent 6 years working for other people, and not that I regret it, but I feel like I could have been 6 years further yeah. ahead.
Yeah. Well, those 6 years, I'm sure you learned a lot of lessons that, you know, some of it might just be, you know, I hate working under somebody and I need
true.
To, you know, bust my ass to make this happen myself. And
yeah, that's true. It was yeah. it was a great motivator, man, just to, like yeah. have an idiot for a boss
yeah.
for a
yeah.
lot of years and just be like, okay, right. I can't do this anymore.
Five years at Target and a couple months at a factory has definitely done that to me.
Yeah.
It will. That would do it. Yeah, for sure. Holy shit.
Yeah. yeah. And I think, too, that, like to try – I've experienced that for a while now, right, is to – try to work a full-time job or even a part-time job and focus enough of your attention on your quote side gig to try to flip that into a full-time thing. That's really, really, really hard right? And I mean, I think the success stories always jump out, right? And you hear folks on YouTube like Bob Claggett, like other people who, you know, grounded out for a period of however many years until they went full time. Those years where they were grinding it out are so far behind them. I think that a lot of them have probably forgotten how miserable they are, but it is, you know, there's a reason those people are kind of the minority. They, you know, everybody says, keep your day job as long as you possibly can. And it, and at some level, both sides suffer, right? The day job suffers, your business suffers. And I don't know, I'm seeing a little bit more of the advantage of, like, take the leap, you know, and you'll know maybe when the opportunity's right or wrong, or when you're presented with something that makes sense or a time period. You know, like we've talked before, I look at what I've got coming in my future as an opportunity. What I make of that is still, you know, still unsure completely, but every day the picture gets a little clearer and a little clearer and a little clearer because I'm allowing myself to devote time to that, right? And, and I found a way to make that so, even though it's not going to be easy, right? And, you know, I'll have a lot of challenges coming up in the future here with, you know, not getting paychecks every week or every 2 weeks, but that time, as much as I possibly can, given health and everything else, is going to be devoted towards what is next. What is next? What is next? And working on building that, you know, it takes so much to build a business now.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ben, if I could give you some advice, I know one thing that you could do.
Yeah.
That will definitely ensure your success.
What's that?
Work for it?
You have to work for it. You gotta work for it. I sucked you right into that one. And with that, I'm going to say that's a show.
Love it,
gentlemen.
Hour and a half. Appreciate you guys. Great
show, guys.
Yeah, hour and a half. And we've definitely got a lot out. We talked it through, and I feel like we're back at it. And this week, I'll tell you, I was sad not to talk to you guys last week. It sucked. But it was for a good reason. I made a major stride in my business and my progression as owner of a business. So, yeah, man. Listen, gentlemen, I appreciate you. And I want to let all of our patrons know that if you're supporting us on Patreon, which you can do for as little as $1 a month, thank you.
Yes.
You have given that dollar. By the way, guys, I don't know if you noticed. Ben, I don't know if you get these reports or not, but we made $22 last month.
Ching.
In ad revenue.
Nice.
Now, the ads that I hear on our show, I never understand them. They're all in French.
McDonald's.
And German,
minor French Spanish and McDonald's. Couple Spanish, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I actually really like it because I'm just like, well, they're not like a traditional ad, you know?
Right.
And I listen to these like people talking, and I'm just like, I love French. It's like a beautiful, it's the love language, right?
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
So we're all going to learn French and do the entire show to mold around those ads, right?
Oh, my God.
Let's
go, guys. Oui, Brian.
Oui, oui.
We'll go get some red wine and some cigarettes.
Hey. You're not going to smoke.
All right, gents, listen, we'll catch up with you next week. And if you're listening to this Work For It podcast, I hope you have an awesome working week. We will see you on the next episode.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
See you guys.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Adios.
Later.
Adios, amigos.
We'll see you later. See you later.
I don't know how to say goodbye in French other than au revoir.
That'll work.
Does that work?
Bueno.
Sure.
Bueno.
Oui, oui.
Oui, oui.
Oui, oui.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.